Let's begin with verse 1, chapter 26, 1 Samuel. It says, "Now the Ziphites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, Is David not hiding in the hill of Hakkelah opposite Jeshimon? And Saul rose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him, to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul encamped in the hill of Hakkelah, which is opposite Jeshimon, by the road. But David stayed in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul had came after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul had indeed come. So David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped." That's interesting, isn't it? Instead of running from him, he goes where he's camping. "And David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army. Now Saul lay within the camp with the people encamped all around him." How many of you know it'd be pretty hard to gain access to him without being recognized? "Then David answered and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother of Joab, saying, Who will go down with me to Saul in the camp? And Abishai said, I will go down with you." Now you think about this. I mean, what David says, who wants to go on this suicide mission with him is what it sounds like. And I don't know why the other guy didn't speak up. Didn't want to go. That's a real good answer. But you understand that this guy's David's cousin. And you'll find that he was the leader of the mighty men and a tremendous warrior and evidently liked the challenge. So he told David, he said, I'll go with you. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and there Saul lay sleeping within the camp with his spear stuck in the ground by his head. There's that spear again. When he's awake, he's holding it. When he's asleep, it's in arm's reach of him, isn't it? Stuck in the ground by his head, and Abner and the people lay all around him. Then Abishai said to David, well, let me just stop right here. You understand that they're out there looking for David. They've just gone to sleep that night. So David goes right into the camp of those who are looking for him. Right, interesting. Then, verse 8, "Then Abishai said to David, God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now, therefore, please let me strike him at once with a spear right to the earth. And I will not have to strike him a second time." You know what he's saying? I'm not going to miss my mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Abishai is asking David to give him permission to kill Saul. Just give me one shot at him. But David said to Abishai, "Do not destroy him. For who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" Isn't it interesting? David's the one that's anointed to be king, but Saul had previously been anointed. And David dare not reach out his hand against the one whom God had set apart to be the king. You'll find when we study kings that there were many times that one would assassinate a king and take his place. He would be the next king. But not so with David. He never tried to promote himself. Now, back years ago, the Lord really spoke to me through this passage of Scripture. A tremendous message. If God's called you to do something, then He can put you where He wants you to be, even if someone else is occupying the position. And you don't have to help Him out. You don't have to kill the person in the position. You don't have to work against the person in the position. All we have to do is just be patient. And God will put us where He said He would put us. Now, always remember that. Don't ever try to get into a position. Even if God's written it on the wall, you are to be in such and such a position, you wait till God puts you there. And this is what David's doing, because God has certainly spoken to him through the prophet and told him he's going to be the king of Israel. through the prophet Samuel, and that's why he was anointed. He said, "For who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" David said, "Furthermore, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out into battle and perish." In other words, what he's telling Abishai is, "I don't have to kill him. You don't have to kill him. Saul's going to die. Either God's going to do it, some enemy's going to do it, he's going to go into battle and get killed, whatever. He will die. But we're not going to kill him." Verse 11 said, "The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But please take now the spear and the jug of water that are by his head and let us go." Now that really amazes me that that's possible, but yet I know it's possible because I've had something similar to happen to that. Something similar to that to happen to me in Vietnam. If you would have ever told me that you could have slipped up on me and take my rifle, I would have challenged you to that. But after being up 36 hours without any sleep, I fell asleep on the side of a hill and the guy came up and took my rifle. Now his objective was to get me in trouble. It almost got him in major trouble. And it was the grace of God I didn't wake up, or he would have been in more trouble than that. Because when you're sitting on the side of the hill in red alert, he'd have been a dead man. You don't look at the color of their skin or the color of the uniform. You ask your questions after the fact, if you're smart. But when I, you know, just looking at that, you think, how in the world could you pull a spear out of the ground beside a man's head? And without him waking up, and not only him, but how about all that army around him? Surely somebody would wake up, right? Well, let's see why they didn't wake up. Sit. Pardon?
It's interesting when he says, "Touch not thine anointed," that's exactly what God made sure happened. He wasn't touched or sensitized by anything, positively or negatively.
Exactly. You know? Saul wasn't, nor was David. Right. And had they woke up, David would have been touched. Because that was Saul's intent, was to kill God's anointed, wasn't it? Verse 12 says, "So David took the spear and the jug of water by Saul's head, and they got away, and no man saw or knew it or awoke. For they were all asleep because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them." That's not what happened to me. A deep sleep fell, but it probably wasn't from God. It's just, I mean, you go so long and you can't sleep. You can sleep on the ambush. You go without sleep long enough, I promise you. You know, you just don't take it for so long. "Now David went over to the other side and stood on the top of a hill afar off, a great distance being between them. And David called out to the people and to Abner, the son of Ner, saying, 'Do you not answer, Abner?' Then Abner answered and said, 'Who are you calling out to the king?'" And I like this part. "So David said to Abner, 'Are you not a man? And who is like you in Israel? Why then have you not guarded your lord the king? For one of the people came in to destroy your lord the king.'" Is that true? I guarantee you, Abishai would have killed him had David not stopped him. "He said, 'This thing that you have done is not good. As the Lord lives, you deserve to die. Because you have not guarded your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is and the jug of water that was by his head.'" Don't you know, old Abner's heart rate has increased. And he's sinking on the inside because in reality, he should have been killed. "Then Saul knew David's voice and said, 'Is that your voice, my son David?' David said, 'It is my voice, my lord, O king.' Now listen to how David presents himself to Saul. He said, "Why does my Lord thus pursue his servant? What have I done?" He's asked that one before, hasn't he? "What evil is in my hand? Now therefore, please let my Lord the King hear the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. But if it is the children of men, may they be cursed before the Lord. For they have driven me this day from sharing in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, 'Go serve other gods.'" In other words, they're trying to drive him out of the land, actually trying to kill him. And in the process of that, you'll find that ultimately they're going to force him out of Israel. "So now, do not let my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord." Do you see what David's doing? He's asking Saul not to kill him. I mean, that was honorable, right? In other words, he had the opportunity to kill Saul. He didn't kill Saul. He said, "Do not let my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord, for the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea, as when one hunts a partridge in the mountains." David didn't think of himself too highly, did he? Now note Saul's response to this. He said, "I have sinned." Well, that's not the first time Saul was admitted to doing the wrong thing, is it? He said, "I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more because my life was precious in your eyes this day." Is that the first time? No. He said it before. David had the opportunity to kill him before. He didn't kill him. This time he has the opportunity. Now Saul's saying the same old thing. Can't really pay any attention to what he's saying, can you? He said, "I will harm you no more because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Indeed, I have played the fool." He's accurate in that statement, isn't he? "And erred exceedingly." David answered and said, "Here's the king's spear. Let one of the young men come over and get it. May the Lord repay every man." See, he didn't even keep his spear. Abner sent somebody, you reckon? He said, "May the Lord repay every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord delivered you into my hand today, but I would not stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. And indeed, as your life was valued much this day in my eyes, so let my life be valued much in the eyes of the Lord." Note that, in the eyes of the Lord. "And let Him deliver me out of all tribulation." Now here he's not making his plea to Saul, is he? He made his plea earlier to Saul, but not here. He's saying let God avenge him or deliver him. And then verse 25, Saul said to David, "May you be blessed, my son David. Now look at this. You shall both do great things and also still prevail." Saul's telling him, I'm no match for you, obviously. I've been out looking for you, me and my 3,000 men. And I'm exposed, and you could have killed me, and you didn't. He said, "You'll prevail." So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place. Now, David wasn't foolish enough to join up with Saul and go back home, was he? Look what he does do. "And David said in his heart, 'Now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul.'" So he didn't put a whole lot of stock in what Saul had said, did he? He said, "There's nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape to the land of the Philistines. And Saul will despair of me to seek me any more in any part of Israel, so I shall escape out of his hand." So he's getting driven out of the land, out of his own inheritance. Going into the land of the very people they're fighting. Going into the land of the one that he killed their champion, you understand. But yet that's where he's going to find refuge from Saul. Well, there's a message in that. That's what often happens to members of the church. people in the church. They have to go to the world to get refuge because the church is trying to kill them and destroy them and crucify them. I won't go there. Just thought I'd throw that out. Then David arose and went over with the 600 men who were with him to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. That's the name sound familiar to you? He's been there before, hasn't he? That's where he disguised him or feigned himself to be insane because of what he feared might happen as a result of people talking. Then David said, well, let me back up. Verse 3, or 2. Then David arose and went over with the 600 men who were with him to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. So David dwelt with Achish at Gath. He and his men, each man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the Carmelitess, Nabal's widow. And it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, so he sought him no more. The people he should be fighting and defeating is the people he was staying away from. Right? That's where David found his refuge. With Saul's enemy. Then David said to Achish, if I have found favor in your eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country that I may dwell there. Well, why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? Now, I don't think we have really a concept of what this actually means, but it... evidently, from what I can gather in all this, it would have been an honor to live in the royal city where the king lived. And so David said, I shouldn't be in this city with you. How about some place outside of here? So Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Therefore, Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. It's a legitimate inheritance, you understand. It belonged to the Philistines. Achish gave it to him. Once he gave it to him, it was his. So it became a part of the inheritance of Judah. Verse 7 says, now the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was 1 full year and 4 months. That's how long he stayed there. From this last encounter with Saul, you'll find that this will sort of give you a location of... when Saul gets killed and all this, okay? A time period, I should say. And David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. For those nations were the inhabitants of the land from of old, as you go to Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. Whenever David attacked the land, he left neither man nor woman alive, but took away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, the camels, and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. In other words, he killed everybody so nobody could rat on him. Now, I want you to think about this. These are the people that should have been utterly destroyed to begin with. Should have been driven out and weren't, okay? So don't think of him too sadistic here, all right? So this is how he's supporting himself and his men. So, verse 10 says, Achish would say, where have you made a raid today? And David would say, against the southern area of Judah. I mean, the boy wasn't about to tell what he was doing, right? Or against the southern area of Jerahmeelites, or against the southern area of the Kenites. David would save neither man nor woman alive to bring news to Gath, saying, lest they should inform on us. Saying, thus David did. And thus was his behavior all the time he dwelt in the country of the Philistines. In other words, for that 1 year and 4 months, any time David went out on a raid, no living human beings, you understand. Nobody's going to tell. You know what he's doing at the same time? He's defending Israel. Living in with the enemy and defending Israel against the enemy he's living with. So Achish believed David, saying, he has made his people Israel utterly abhor him, therefore he will be my servant forever. And then you get into chapter 28. It says, now it happened in those days the Philistines gathered their armies together for war to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, you assuredly assuredly know that you will go out with me to battle, you and your men. So Achish was right impressed with David as a warrior, and he says, you know, you're going with me. So David said to Achish, surely you know what your servants can do. And Achish said to David, therefore I will make you one of my chief guardians forever. Boy, that's something. In other words, you're going to be right up here guarding my life, boy. Now Samuel had died and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah. And if you're looking at your outline, I misspelled it. Forgive me. Take the T out. In his own city, and Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. Then the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel together, and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. You know, there's something that interests me about Saul. From the very beginning, you find that he was a man that was afraid when confronted with the enemy. But with David, I find the very opposite. Even as a shepherd, he didn't kill the bear, the lion with the sling. I mean, he said he took him by the beard and killed him. While Saul and the armies of Israel were trembling when Goliath made his boast, what was David doing? Who is this man? Who is this that's defying and cursing God's army? And then when he went up against him, what did he do? Hide and try to ambush him? No, he ran to meet him head on. Quite a contrast when you look at the difference between David and Saul. And yet the same prophet anointed both of them. The same God set both of them apart. One of them had the heart. One of them God had to change the heart. Now that's beyond me right there. There's something in all that. That's come to me several times. Saul didn't have the heart originally. David did. And God said, I'm going to seek a man that's got the heart already. You don't find him changing his heart, do you? So we find that Saul's afraid. Verse 6 says, when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams, or by Urim, or by the prophets. Remember what the Urim is? It's a thing worn in the... I did have a poster up here somewhere. You see these stones... One on each shoulder, Urim and Thummim. That's what he's talking about. That was the way that they inquired by God. And I've mentioned this earlier. There's not a whole lot in the research. You won't find a whole lot about it. It appears that maybe the stone changed colors or something. That's what most scholars are saying. That the, you know, like a yes or a no type thing. But Saul couldn't get an answer anywhere that he looked. He couldn't get it through a dream. He couldn't get it through the Urim. And there weren't any prophets that could speak to him. Now listen to me. I want you to pay particular attention to that verse of Scripture. Because when we get on a little farther in this, you'll find that it appears Samuel is conversing with Saul. So just remember that. God would not speak to him through a dream. God would not speak to him through the high priest, and God would not speak to him through a prophet, although he's seeking God. So verse 7 says, then Saul said to his servants, find me a woman who has a medium, or find me a demon-possessed woman. Now I'm going to call it as it is, okay? Anyone that operates with a familiar spirit is operating under demonic power. It's through the spirit, a demon spirit, a demonic spirit, okay? And this is what Saul is saying. God's not answering me. Let me talk to a devil. Now, he didn't say it just like that. And familiar spirits can tell you some stuff. But I hope you're not foolish enough to go to one. Saul said, find me a woman who has a medium or familiar spirit. Actually, if you look this word medium up, what does your version say? What's the old King James say? Kenny? Does it say what? Familiar spirit. Actually, if you look it up, it's a Hebrew word, OWB, and it means a mumble. And it's when you trace that on down, it's talking about find me somebody who communicates with departed spirits. We call that necromancer. That's what he's looking for, somebody to communicate with the dead. That's what he's asking them for. And his servant said to him, in fact, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor. So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes. All that means is he takes off his royal apparel so he doesn't appear as a king, and he dresses as a common person. It says, so Saul disguised himself, put on other clothes, and he went, and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, please conduct a seance for me. What does your version say, Kenny? Okay. And bring up for me the one I shall name to you. Then the woman said to him, look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the spiritists from the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die? She says, now you know Saul's removed these people, and if I start practicing this and Saul finds out, I'm in trouble. And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. Then the woman said, whom shall I bring up for you? And he said, bring up Samuel for me. Now note that at this point in time, this woman doesn't know who Samuel is. Really, evidently. There's evidently something, if she did, nothing's registered. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice, and the woman said to Saul, why have you deceived me, for you are Saul? And the king said to her, do not be afraid. What did you see? And I ask you, what has Saul seen at this point in time? Not a thing. Not a thing. He's simply going off of what someone else has said, all right? And the woman said to Saul, I saw a spirit. You know, actually, it's the word Elohim. Gods. Look it up in Hebrew. I saw gods ascending out of the earth. That's what she's saying, literally. I saw gods ascending out of the earth. Now, our version, what does yours say? Spirit? Does the old version say gods? Okay. The real Bible says that, all right. So he said to her, what is his form? Now, you understand Saul is not seeing anything. He said, what is his form? And she said, an old man is coming up and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel. He never saw him, did he? And he stooped with his face to the ground, bowed down. Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? And Saul answered, I am deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called you, that you may reveal to me what I should do. Then Samuel said, so why do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy? Now, that's something when God becomes your enemy. And here again, I'm not convinced, in my own heart, I'm not convinced this is Samuel. Okay? Then you can form your own opinion on this, all right? He's talking to a woman with a familiar spirit. You know what a familiar spirit is? It's somebody that's familiar. A spirit that's familiar, that can tell you anything. And people get deceived in thinking that God's speaking when in reality it isn't God at all. The Spirit knows. And we'll throw out a couple things to you here and let you form your own opinion, all right? Sure. When evidently when she went through her ritual to bring up this dead person, that she comes into the realization that she ties in, she evidently ties it together, or she knows by this familiar spirit. My thought would be that once she gets locked into the familiar spirit, see, she's seeing through the spirit. She's operating through this demonic spirit. And the Spirit knows Saul. That's how I understand this, okay? Verse 17 says, "And the Lord has done for Himself as He spoke by me." Now that doesn't tell me whether it's Samuel speaking or not. "For the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord nor execute His fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore the Lord has done this to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." In other words, what he's saying is, you and your sons will no longer be in a physical body. In other words, you're going to get killed. Okay? She's operating from a demonic spirit, and then she's obviously communicating with the dead. Now, let me throw another side. Let me put some light on the other side of it, of the people that believe that this is Samuel. At this particular... I'm not supposed to get behind you, am I, Doug? At this particular time, who has charge of the departed spirits? The devil. See, Jesus hasn't come to earth yet. Jesus has not taken the keys or the authority away from the devil, right? So the devil does have authority over the departed spirits. How much? I don't know as to what he could release or whatever. But in that he is the devil, in that she's operating through a familiar spirit, I lean toward the fact that the devil is the father of lies. There's absolutely no truth in him. And that he will imitate and mimic. And he has that ability to do that because he knows these things. He's familiar with Samuel. He's familiar with Saul. He's familiar with things. Can the devil tell things about the future? Yes, he can. Now, here's where people miss this. Eternity versus an age. You and I live in an age, don't we? That means it has a beginning and it has an end. But eternity does not have a beginning or an end. You with me? So what we call past, what we call present, what we call future, we divide into three categories. That's not the case in eternity. It's all one thing. God Himself says He sees the beginning, He sees the end from the beginning. And you have to understand that if we understand who the devil is as a fallen angel, then he knows things as well. Spirit knows. Okay? Now let's bring it in here. Right here in this modern day. When you get into the Spirit, you're not operating naturally, but you minister and you start operating out of the Spirit, how can you tell somebody something about the future? How can a palm reader tell you something about the future? And some of them get it right. Because there's no time element with the Spirit. Whether it's a good spirit, whether it's a bad spirit, it's eternal. You go to heaven, it's eternal. You go to hell, it's eternal. Does that make sense, or have I totally confused you? Which way? I totally confused you? I'll tell you what, keep that mind going during the break. Think about it and come back. If you have a question, then ask it and we'll go.